This is Liz Rose and Stephanie Davies. You're about to hear the very first episode of our new podcast, Question the Case. Because we were nervous and we didn't know where to start, we just sort of jumped right into a casual, freeform, slightly non-linear conversation that you're about to hear without providing you, the listener, with much background information on ourselves or the case that we're going to be talking about. So we're going to do that here as sort of an addendum to our first episode. My name's Liz Rose, and you may or may not be familiar with my family's story. My father is Jim Milgar, and he was murdered in a home invasion in Houston, Texas on December 23rd, 2012. My mother, Sandra Milgar, is currently in prison after being wrongfully convicted of the crime. And while I'd love for you to learn more about my parents' case at freesandymilgar.com, this podcast isn't about that. But it is relevant with how I got involved with the case that this podcast is about. My co-host is Stephanie. She's been a friend of mine all of my life. She's been in my life for as long as I can remember. She's been with me throughout my family's entire ordeal. She loves true crime and she shares my curiosity, my dark sense of humor, and a passion for righting wrongs. So I'm so excited that we're finally doing this together. I've been a guest on podcasts before, but this is a completely different experience. This is our very first podcast where we're the hosts. So please keep that in mind. If the sound isn't perfect or we don't sound like professional podcasters yet, we are definitely learning as we go. And I'm so thankful for the help of Bob Ruff from the Truth and Justice podcast and Kimberly from Date with Dateline for guiding us along the way, for giving us advice, and for just being wonderful people. Now, onto the case that we're going to be talking about on this podcast. Ivan Abner Cantu currently sits on death row for the murder of his cousin, James Mosqueda, and James's fiance, Amy Kitchen. There's a popular podcast that we will purposefully not be mentioning by name that covers Ivan's case and proclaims his innocence. And since I've been touched personally by tragedy and false imprisonment, I was drawn in immediately. I binged the podcast, I joined a Facebook group about the case, and I started corresponding with people close to Ivan, which we'll talk more about soon. I was incredibly eager to help and to fight for justice for Ivan. However, and I'll be talking more about this in our first episode, I began to realize that things weren't quite adding up. I eventually came to the conclusion that despite the popular podcast theory and the many people proclaiming Ivan's innocence, the evidence, at least to me, did back up his conviction and pointed to his guilt. Not only that, but I believe that more people than just Ivan were involved that are not being held accountable. I started speaking out about my new beliefs, and that has definitely upset some people, such as Ivan, Ivan's family, and the creator of the original podcast. Because of that, I may refer to individuals simply as this person because I'm not comfortable giving their names at this time. But I will try to clarify as much as possible. We believe that no one should take anyone's word as gospel, not ours or any other podcasters. So we're going to go through the evidence as it stands and let you draw your own conclusions. You might agree with us, you might not, but you'll know the facts, and you'll know to always question the case. And now, here's our first episode. Long time ago, there was a man.
No, named, we have to start with us.
Named Atma.
No, that's not the beginning.
So where would we start? Sometime over the summer, around maybe June, July. Mm. I had just done a podcast about my parents' case,
and for those of you who don't know,
are Jim and Sandy Milgar.
Jim Milgar was stabbed to death in his closet in Houston, Texas on December 23rd, 2012. And you can read more about that at freesandymilgar.com.
What, like, take them through the process.
Because I don't...
But you need to feel it.
I don't really feel much. I'm dead inside.
Whatever. You can't be dead inside for this. You know, express that. Okay. Your journey through that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, why were you so moved by it?
All right. So, over the summer, we had basically reached a point in my parents' case where I wasn't able to investigate any further. And there was nothing else to turn over in my mind. There's nothing new to take in. You know, I had looked at everything 100 times and I felt like I was going crazy because I was just kind of like obsessing over it. And I felt myself going crazy. You know, I needed something else to turn over in my head. Some other, I don't know, facts or numbers. I don't know. And, you know, I've been working with this PI to get my own license.
It's not the same PI as podcaster PI. This guy is a professional and well-respected PI.
And he basically told me that I'm broken now. This is my new normal. And I'm going to have to find something to fill that. He's like, you can do something that you enjoy because he knows of my morbid interests in true crime and whatnot. But yeah, he's just, he's been really supportive of everything. But he told me to find a hobby. So, yeah, I felt like I had all this knowledge that came out of a horrible time in my life. It was like trial by fire. There were no books about what to do, and there was no, you know, how-to manual. You can't really Google what to do when your dad is murdered and your mom is wrongfully convicted of his murder. But yeah, I kind of felt like I had found my voice and like my footing and that I had figured out what it would have taken. I basically just like, I figured out how to do things right through some of my own mistakes, but also just through my own experiences. And I found out how to kind of get things moving, what to look for, stuff like that. So I do a podcast interview on a podcast called The First Degree, and I joined their Facebook group. And I was just curious what the general consensus was about the interview. And somebody on there was asking for help with her son, who was currently on death row. I remember the post said that they just wanted all the evidence before he was executed. And what do they have to hide? Just give him the evidence. So she's sharing a petition on there, and she's sharing a link to one of these episodes of this podcast. So I follow the link and I listen to the episode while I'm doing the dishes, and I'm immediately hooked and I end up binging the whole thing. It was really, really good. However, what I didn't realize is that this story had been sort of this evolving work in progress type story that was once based on a true crime and suddenly became this work of fiction. And it was just bizarre to realize that, I guess I'm jumping ahead of myself here. Anyway, so I start listening to this and I'm thinking, wow, this sounds really crazy. You know, I can't believe this is true, but it must be because this guy's a private investigator and he's doing a podcast about this crime and this guy is in prison. And, you know, I see this is a real person, you know, and this must be a real.
And your experience in life tells you.
Right. Is that
this is totally possible.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, the story was really out there, but in my experience, so was ours, right? I mean, when I tell people about my parents' case, I know they're all, you know, they're probably thinking, oh, yeah, I'm so sure all of that happened. Everybody in prison's innocent.
Right. And everyone thinks that you're automatically going to be biased towards your mom's innocence.
Right.
Which just blows my mind because that would mean that I would invite, if she were to be guilty, which I know she's not, but if she were, and I were still advocating for her, it just feels crazy to invite somebody, a convicted murderer, into my home. If I thought she were guilty, there is no way that I would want her around me or my kids. But I mean, that's obviously not the case.
Yeah. So what do I have to lose, right? It's a new case that I can turn over my head because they're asking for help. They're asking for a crowdsourced investigation. And I reach out to both the mother of the convicted and also to the PI podcaster. Yeah, so we start talking and, you know, I tell him who I am and he goes and he looks into my case and he looks into who I am. But I'll never forget what he said. He even admitted that this case was a lot more, convoluted, and that, you know, my mom's case had been a lot more obvious.
Right.
And he even said, you know, you really have to jiggle things around to into place. I'll never forget when he said that. But yeah, he's like, yeah, with this, you have to kind of move things into place a little bit. And it's a little harder, you know, to connect the dots. But it's all there. It's all there. It's just a little hard to see at first. Well, okay, well, you've been working on this for a couple of years. All right, like, why don't we work on this together? Cool. So I'm helping this guy, looking to see what I can find. And I think that they see that I know what I'm doing now and I know where to look. So they start trusting me a little bit more and they're giving me more information. And eventually I get case files, which I thought was a little bit odd because I thought that they weren't getting any of these case files. They weren't getting any of the evidence. But then I'm told, like, this is only part of it. This is only what was admitted into trial, but not even all of that. It's just a little bit. So we can work off of this, but it's not all of it. Some of it's missing. There are pages missing. Okay, well, I'm not really shocked about that either, right? We've seen that happen before. And then I write to this person in prison, and he writes me back, and it just kind of felt like a used car salesman had sent me a postcard.
Did it immediately?
It felt cheesy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, how are you this positive when you're on death row? Like, not even, I'm not even this positive, you know? It didn't feel real. It didn't feel genuine. Mm-hmm. And then, so I didn't write back for a while. And I guess he started getting a little bit impatient because I got like 9 or 10 letters in a series of like 2.5-3 months. And I don't know. It was just, he became very pushy. And
for someone who's resistant to being pushed into anything.
Yeah, so I don't really like being pushed around or, you know, told how to do things. So I immediately dug my heels in a little bit and just kind of ignored him a little bit longer. As you do, you know, ignore it and wait.
If somebody calls me and I don't answer and they hang up and call again, they've just guaranteed I'm not answering. Exactly. And I'm not calling you back now either.
Well, now everybody knows that.
Only with some people. Yeah.
It's too late. No. So I stopped talking to this person. So his crime occurred in, when was it? November 4th, 2000. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so, you know, I kind of stopped communicating with him, and I end up communicating with his wife, who he married in 2007. And I'll just tell you a little bit about this case, what he's been convicted for. His name is Ivan Abner Cantu. He was born June 14th, 1972. He is currently on death row in the Polensky unit in Huntsville, Livingston. He was convicted for the murder of his cousin, James Mosqueda, and his cousin's fiance, Amy Kitchen. They were both found shot to death in their home on November 4th, 2000. So I start communicating with, it wasn't so much that I started communicating with her. It was that the PI podcaster gave my phone number without asking me to this person's wife when I had, you know, specifically used a P.O. box and I had used Google Voice number. You know, I had tried to be really careful and he kind of just threw that out the window. And I wasn't happy about that and he did apologize, but, you know, we can't put it back, right? So I start talking to this woman and I don't know, I just from the very beginning, I did not trust her. I just had a really bad feeling.
But first, you had gotten really involved with Sylvia, his mother.
Right.
And that was more of a...
That was more of a normal relationship. She seemed like a sweet old lady who was currently in denial about her son being on death row.
Which is completely understandable.
But yeah. You connected with her.
I connected with her because I know in the beginning I did believe that something had gone wrong somewhere and a ball had been dropped. I don't know. I felt like there might have been a failing somewhere. And there was an argument always made that, you know, he didn't get a defense. He didn't have any witnesses called for him. They didn't say anything. They just rested after the state did. And, you know, that didn't sound right to me. It didn't sit right either, but I don't think I was really looking at the bigger picture. I was kind of, you know, guilty of what some police do when they get tunnel vision, when they're so sure that there's a certain outcome waiting. Anyway, yeah, so I spent a lot of time on the phone with this lady, and she tells me a convincing story, but I get to know her. I get to know stories about her sons and what it was like back then, you know, what happened. She tells me her version of events. She starts giving me a little bit more information. She started giving me recordings of interviews that had been done by other private investigators, and including the one that was doing the podcast. At first, they gave me a lot of information, and I didn't know what to do with all of it, and none of it really made sense to me because I wasn't very familiar with the case. So I listened to the podcast a couple of times, and I really sat down with the file, and I went through it, and I was reading it, trying to put the pieces together, and things just, there's just little things here and there that didn't feel right. And people would just, they would just lie to my face as if I wouldn't remember what they had said in the past. And it was just a very bizarre feeling. It was just something, it was just strange. So I'm doing what I can to help get the word out about this case, this podcast. You know, they want help. They want to see if there's any merit to the to what Ivan is saying, that he's been wrongfully convicted of capital murder. And this is what I find interesting, is that with me, he never said he was innocent. Mm. He never said that. He always said that he was not guilty of capital murder.
Right.
And the funny thing is that even his lawyers said that in their closing statements.
Right.
And see, I can make all these connections now because I know the case so well, but at the time, this isn't really connecting. So as I get to know the people better and I get to know the case better, you know, things aren't adding up. And I think people are starting to confuse their stories a little bit more because they've been lying for so long. And yeah, things just fell into place when I admitted, somebody asked my opinion in the group after I had gotten this podcast a lot of publicity on another podcast. And yeah, I realized, like, they were using me to get the word out. They were using me as kind of like a, to get people interested in this case. And I just think that that's very telling what kind of people they are and what they're doing, that they're going to use a crime victim to advance their story for their own reasons, which I still cannot understand what those could be, but I just wrap my head around.
Well, we do know.
It's just, I know.
I mean,
I just can't understand how that's enough. I just, I don't know.
A Google search will, you know, take you to Reddit, where the podcast host is specifically talking about making a documentary on the case. And,
yeah, they say, this might sound like a movie. Well, it's not yet.
Yeah. Yet. Exclamation point.
Yeah. It's really gross. This person used to be a Hollywood producer, and I guess this is their way of preparing for a documentary on this person in prison, on Ivan Cantu, and I can't even understand what their angle is, because I can't see anything but Ivan being guilty, and it's so hard for me to, I can't understand somebody that could be that dishonest to help a murderer on death row, a convicted murderer, help him, like, advance his, like, game of manipulation, and the fact that he can manipulate people the way he has been from death row, that is scary. And that shows just how dangerous this person is, that he's been able to pull this off for so long. But yeah, I was asked what my opinion was, and I said things were not looking good for Ivan, in my opinion. And I started to become more and more vocal that I believed he was guilty, that once I got the unredacted, or mostly unredacted, case file from Ivan's mother, I was able to put everything together, and I realized that they were completely misleading people, and it was eventually found out that they were even updating their podcast continuously so that what you hear today is completely different from what was originally released. It feels like they're trying to rewrite history. It feels like they're trying to spin some story around the evidence that the police had in order to spin it to make it look like he's innocent. I don't know. It's disgusting because not only did he kill two people in cold blood, needlessly, not that there's ever a need to kill anybody, but
sometimes there's
but just that he went into these people's home, his own family, his blood relatives, and he shoots them to death in their homes where you're supposed to feel the safest with the people that you're supposed to feel safest with and that you're supposed to be able to trust. And then he I don't know if he's talked this person into following this plan or if he just doesn't realize he's being manipulated, but for them to do this and to just paint a very, very untrue picture, just very inaccurate picture. It's doing such a disservice to the victims, and it's hurting them. I don't know. It's horrible.
I think in the older versions of the episodes that you can find on YouTube in the introductory episode, there was a lot of discussion about this being just like Serial, and a lot of comparisons made. And so I just think that was as strange as it sounds.
I don't remember hearing that.
Yeah.
Is that still in the...
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. He calls Ivan our version of... What's the other guy's name? Adnan?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. How dare he?
He's giving himself a lot of credit, right?
Yes. Wow. Wow. What's funny, though, is, before in preparation for this podcast, we met with a producer, somebody who has a lot of experience putting together radio shows and TV shows. And it's so funny because what they were suggesting to us sounds a lot like what this person is doing on their podcast.
Right. Yeah.
It sounds like they're planning for a TV show more than anything else. And, this is just one big focus group.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like, especially when once the audience started kind of putting things together with the help of Liz, myself, and a few other people in a Facebook group for the podcast, everything fell apart rather quickly. It was interesting, to say the least.
I've never experienced anything like that in my life. It was actually really fascinating.
Members all of a sudden just started disappearing quickly, including Liz. But then Liz was added back by one of his own moderators. And then one of the moderators started posting the link for our podcast under every post. And eventually the group was just deleted with no explanation, no nothing, just no answers to the questions that were being asked.
1,700 people were deleted within a matter of hours.
Right. And so that kind of pushed us to open up a group, a place for everyone to go.
Well, just the fact that he thinks he can stop the converse, the discussion that way is... interesting. I just wonder what he thinks is going to happen if he actually tries to produce this documentary.
Right.
Especially because this person doesn't have the first clue of what it's like to go through a wrongful conviction, what the process is post-conviction, the appeals process. I mean, even Freedom of Information Act requests, had no idea, refused to do them because the family had told him that the county was refusing to give anybody any information. So it was pointless to do a FOIA request because the lawyer couldn't even get the file, so what's the point? And so even he started repeating that. If the lawyer can't get the file, you know, how do I expect to get the file? They're not going to give it to me. And I'm thinking, have you even tried? And I said this. I said, have you even tried? Just try. You know, if they say no, then okay. But at best, you get the fucking file.
Right.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So I did a FOIA request. And I'm just really excited to
clear your name from this train wreck.
Yes. I'm just looking forward to, to putting the truth out there, because
it's one thing if you're going to say that you're innocent. It's another thing if you're going to say you're innocent at the expense of the victims and everyone else in your life.
And this isn't just anybody. This is his immediate family on his father's side. And, you know, his cousin has really stepped up and done an amazing job of dispelling any lies or rumors to the best of her knowledge. But the fact that she has to do that 20 years later and reopen these wounds is just, it's disgusting. It's uncalled for. It's unnecessary. And I understand that a lot of people see this as entertainment, and it is, it's interesting, right? And I feel like a lot of people confuse interesting and entertaining. And I just want everybody to remember, these are people's lives. This is the worst moment of their entire life that they've ever been through. And it changes a person forever, because it is just, it's just so horrible. But then for them to make entertainment out of that is, it's just, it's gross. And I think that the big reason that the group was deleted was because it came out that this person, who is a licensed PI in the state of Louisiana, at Ivan's wife's house address.
Yeah, we did a search, and we ended up tracing the address of the PI's investigative firm to the home address of Ivan's wife, which, you know, not sure what to make of it.
Doesn't seem very
professional.
Professional, there we go.
Maybe conflict of interest.
There we go. That's the word I was looking for. Wrong.
Suspect.
Yeah. In more ways than one. Yeah, so when somebody, so it was Kelly, the victim's sister. It was her that brought it to my attention that this person was going in other groups and talking to friends of Amy Kitchen under this pseudonym. And it was just very strange that they were claiming to be a PI of this name, not their real name, or at least what I think is their real name. Who knows now? So this becomes denied fiercely by the wife of Ivan Cantu. And it's really funny because I think 2 months ago, when it was first brought to my attention, I did ask him who that was, and I got a text back saying, it's my fake book action. And I think he meant account. I hope he meant account. When I say something, I want to be able to back it up. So I did post the screenshot to the group with the date and time that it was received and sent. And that is when members started disappearing from the group, including me. Yeah, so here we are. We're going to resume the discussion here. In a way, what I really want to do and what I'm hoping to do is to just go through the evidence, the case file, follow the evidence. We're going to, instead of making a theory and making the evidence fit it, I just want to follow the evidence and let it tell the story. That way it's as close to the truth as we're going to get. And also because I hate the fact that the victims get lost in this, and that Amy and James have had their names dragged through the mud in the name of some fictitious account of what happened that night.
And I think we've got the trial transcripts available on our Facebook group, Question the Case podcast, right?
Yeah.
And
also at the website.
Yes.
Questionthecase.com.
And I think that that was one of the big mistakes that the other podcaster made when creating his narrative, is that he made those transcripts available, because pretty much everyone who read them walked away saying, oh my God, this guy is clearly guilty.
And it's so funny that you can come to that conclusion so strongly and easily, because
I don't think people realize that court transcripts are not written with any feeling or emotion put into it. It's just, they just type the words as they hear them, and they don't add any emphasis on anything or any emotion. It's just exactly what is said.
We've recorded ourselves, I don't want to say performing the transcripts, because we tried very hard to keep it in that same sort of neutral tone for most of the witnesses. But it,
you know, it got a little tedious. We had to have some fun with it.
As Liz said, it did get a little tedious. So sometimes, I don't know.
There may be some silliness here and there. And I think it's also important to start this off on the right foot so you know what to expect. Stephanie and I come from a very, we have a very crazy history in our, you know, our lives don't always sound real. There, you know, there's some shit that's happened. And
right.
When bad things happen to you a lot, your first line of defense is going to be on how you deal with that. And
you get to a point where you have to laugh.
Yeah, you have to laugh or you're gonna cry.
So our sense of humor are somewhat
dark. And
we don't want to be offensive at any point, and we're trying to be sensitive.
I know that some of this might sound offensive, but I just want everybody to remember, like, this is my experience, this is what I've been through, and this is how I'm coping with it. So I hope this doesn't offend anybody, you know, any jokes that I make or any of my humor, but I just want to put that little advisory out there.
This is not my experience. I'm just a dark and twisted bitch, really. No, I have my own weird experiences that have made me this way, but they don't include this particular experience.
I mean, I've never had a Yugoslavian family living in my room when I came home from school. We could cut that out.
No, I don't care.
I love it.
If it's the truth.
Another thing that I think is really important to mention is that, you know, we realize now that there are no rules in podcasting.
We have no clue what we're doing.
Yeah, we don't know what we're doing. But also, anybody can do this. And anybody can say anything they want to. So it's very, very important that you always, always check your facts. Always.
Question.
Case. Were you building up to
the... No, who was it?
Yeah, you should not blindly believe what anyone has to say, ever, including us.
And always ask for a lawyer when speaking to the police.
And then stop talking.
Yeah.
That was the
lesson learned.
Was it?
Well, the hard way. Don't do that again. Yeah, so that's basically where we are. I am considered persona non grata to these people. They've told me that I have betrayed them by saying what I believe to be the truth. They really wanted me to not say anything so that they could continue their game. That's what it feels like. Yeah, I feel like this guy was asking me to be like one of the cops that just gets tunnel vision and railroads the first person that comes along because it's the easiest thing to do, or for whatever reason. So, I don't like being used, and I don't like being lied to, and I can get really angry, which I did do, or I can do something about it, which is what I always tell my kids. Life's not fair, but what matters is what you do about it. So, welcome to our podcast, and I hope that you will join us as we question the case. I hope you will continue to listen and follow our journey as we unravel the case of Ivan Cantu and the He Said, She Said. Join the Question the Case podcast group on Facebook to join the discussion. Subscribe for new episodes on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you all next time on Question the Case.